Believe me, my name is Gabe Chavez, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sober by God's amazing grace. I want to thank Sharon for that wonderful introduction. She came to me earlier before the meeting started. She says, I'm going to be introducing you. She says, I don't know you, I don't know anything about you. And I says, thank God she can't say anything bad about me. My wife's with me tonight, and she's a member of Al-Anon, and she kindly reminded me, they do that in Al-Anon, you know, to thank you and for the appreciation of this wonderful, wonderful dinner you had tonight. I'm truly amazed we have real silverware and real plates and cups, you know, and tablecloths, candles, can you imagine? This is absolutely wonderful, and I want to thank those that were responsible for that. I know a lot of work goes into that, and I want to thank John for asking me to come up here and for that lovely introduction. I truly do consider this a great honor to be in Salina to help you celebrate your 28th anniversary. It's an honor to be at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, especially to be asked to share your experience, strength, and hope, and for that I'm grateful. Why I'm really here is what I want to share with you before I get into my story. I shared it not too long ago when I was given my lead in Dayton, and I think it's apropos that I share it with you tonight. What length will you go to help another achieve sobriety, and what length will you go to help yourself achieve sobriety? And that's what this program is all about, being willing to give of yourself. And I was taken back about 8 years ago. I was asked to give a lead at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on Christmas night. And I said, yes, I'd like to do that. You know, the program of AA has brought my family back to us, and Christmas is a very special time in our household. And we were having a wonderful day on Christmas Day, and I didn't want to leave the home and go to that meeting, even though I had to give the lead. And so I waited to the very last minute, and then I went to this meeting, and it was held in a church, and it was in Dayton, Ohio, and it was a place called, a suburb of Dayton, Ohio, called Oakwood. And you go into this church, and it's a long church. You have to go all the way down to the basement to get to the meeting room. Anyway, I drove up to the church just before the meeting was to start, and I didn't see one car in the parking lot. And I'm saying to myself, well, maybe I got the time wrong, or something is not right here. So I worked my way into the church, and I walked down this real dark hallway, and I walked downstairs, and I started going down this other hallway where the meeting is to be held, and I saw a light on, so I knew that there was somebody there. And as I got closer to the room, I saw the man that asked me to give the lead that night standing at the doorway. And I walked up to him, and he says, thank you, Gabe, for coming. And I says, there's nobody here. He said, well, it's Christmas night. Maybe they're home with their families. I said, well, maybe you're right. So we went inside and we were talking. I thought, well, maybe a few will come in just before the meeting starts, like I got there. And at 8:30 when this meeting started, we were the only two there. And I said, well, it doesn't look like anybody's going to come. I guess we can call the meeting off. He says, no, this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to have a meeting. I said, there's just the two of us. He says, it only takes two to have a meeting. And then he said, would you please sit down? And I sat down, and he stood up, and he went to the front of the room. I'm the only one there. And he read the preamble to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he looked at me, and he said, would you like to read How It Works? And I says, well, sure. So I got up, and I read How It Worked, and I sat down, and he read the 12 traditions, and he said, would you like to read the promises? And I says, well, sure. And I got up, and I read the promises, and I sat down, and he says, do we have any announcements from the floor? I'm the only one there. He said, well, there's no announcements from the floor. He says, this is a lead meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, I've asked a man to come over here and share his experience, strength, and hope. And he's talking to me. And he gave me a wonderful introduction, and I got up, and he sat down. And for the next hour, I told my story to that man. You know, and after I told my story, I sat down and he stood up and he made some wonderful comments about my story. And the meeting was over with, and he passed the basket, and he said, here. And I gave a buck. He took it. He didn't give a buck. I remember that. And I helped him close the meeting up. We put the coffee away, and we straightened up, and we walked out. And we walked to the driveway together, and then he walked me to my car, and he says, I really want to thank you for coming tonight and sharing your experience, strength, and hope. He says, I needed some positive input in my life today. It's really, really tough for me, and he broke down. You see, his family's in Kansas, and he's here, and he's having a real difficult time, and he's new in sobriety, and he needed somebody to help him that night, and he thanked me for helping him. Now, I didn't know at the time that was what it was all about. But that had a profound effect on me. You know, what length are you willing to go to help another person achieve sobriety? You know, coming from Dayton, Ohio here is not a great amount for me to do. You know, I'm going to give you an example of what it takes to go to any length to help another person. A few years ago, in Seattle, Washington, that happens to be my hometown, they held a Special Olympics. And there were 9 contestants there that were considered to be mentally and physically disabled. And they were all lined up to run the 100-yard dash, these 9 people. And at the gun, they all started out, not exactly in a dash, but with a rally to run the race to the finish. All except one little boy who stumbled and he fell over and he started to cry. Now the other 8 contestants heard the little boy cry and they all turned around. And then one by one, they went back to that little boy who was crying. All of them. And one little girl with Down syndrome bent down and kissed the little boy and said, well, this will make it better. And then they did the most amazing thing. All 9 contestants stood up and they linked arms and they marched together to the finish line. Now, and everybody in the stadium gave him a standing ovation, and the cheering went on for a few minutes, you know. And now, and I know deep down inside all of us, you know, it's not winning that's the most important thing for us. Deep down inside, the most important thing for us in Alcoholics Anonymous is help another win, because in helping somebody else win, we win as a result of that benefit, you know. And sometimes we have to change our course and slow down to help those people, you know. And if you pass this on, you know, maybe we'll open up our hearts and we'll help somebody else open up their hearts. You know, we should learn a lesson from those Special Olympians. You know, some people still call those people retarded. You know, are they? A lot more wisdom than we do sometimes. And that's why I'm here. I'm willing to go to any length to do that today. And sometimes I minimize what I do. And sometimes I overemphasize what I do to sound important for what I'm doing. And it's not that at all. There were people here to help me when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my duty, it's my commencement to do the same thing back for you, if you're willing to allow that to happen in your life the way I was allowed to happen in my life, so that we can get on with our lives. I'm here to tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Of course, there's a condition to that, the way I perceive the truth. You know. I'm here to share, in effect, to share my life with you and the time that I have to share it. I'm going to share about my birth into this world and my death in this world from alcoholism because of the abuse of alcohol, and my rebirth into the fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous, because I truly do believe this is a fellowship of rebirth, of being reborn and transformed. I truly do believe this is a fellowship of regeneration, of recreation, you know, of a rejuvenation. I truly do believe this is a fellowship of change, of being made all over again. And how much have I changed in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? I came to you people, a poor Mexican, on July 19th, 1985. I stand before you tonight, a rich Spaniard. It changes all of you, you know. I want to go back as far as I can go back and share with you up to this point about, you know, what happened and what it was like and what my life is like today. You know, and I came into this world on November 22nd, 1941 in a little small town called Las Vegas, New Mexico. Not Las Vegas, Nevada, but Las Vegas, New Mexico. There is such a town. And that was a couple of weeks before the start of World War II, and I know there are some of you in this room that are kind of young and don't know anything about World War II. I don't know anything about World War II, but I was born a couple of weeks before World War II and into a Mexican family in a poor section of town. I wasn't born in a hospital. I was born in an adobe home. And if you don't know what an adobe home is, that's a home made out of mostly dirt and straw. The street that I was born on wasn't paved with asphalt. It was a dirt street. The front yard of our home wasn't green with grass. It was a dirt front yard. The floor of our home wasn't made of wood or stone. It was a dirt floor. The walls were bare, the shelves were bare, and most of the times the cupboards were bare. I guess the coin is phrased, I was dirt poor when I came into this world. My father came from a large family, raised during the Depression era. My mother also came from a large family, raised during the Depression era, and they got married young in life. Neither one had very much of an education, no skills whatsoever. And where they were married was a little town called Trinidad, and they moved to a little town called Las Vegas, Nevada, so my dad could get a job, secure a job in the coal mines. That's what he wanted to do in order to take care of his family. When I came to this world, there was already a little baby girl in our family. It was my older sister. So he's 19, she's 17, and they already have a baby 2.5 years old. They have a brand new baby, me. It's 2 weeks before World War II, and my father's working not as a coal miner, but as a delivery boy for a grocery store. Now, my father was a proud, loyal, and patriotic American. He wanted to serve his country, so he wanted to go fight in the war. And a few months later, he joined the United States Navy to go off and fight in the war for his country. Left my mother and my older sister and me to fend for themselves. He didn't have any money, didn't have anything to leave him. He went off to fight the war because he was that type of person at that point in his life. My mother, what she did is she packed us all up and took us back to Colorado, across the border from New Mexico, in a little town called Trinidad. And she sent me to live with my grandparents, which live about 5 miles from this town, in a little town called Madrid. And that's where I grew up when my father was off fighting the war. And when you are raised in a small environment, in a poor environment, with poor people, you don't know you're poor. You know? You're joyous, happy, and free, because my grandparents, as much as I can remember about my small life at that point in my life, was that they loved me, and they nurtured me, and they took care of me. And I cherished that time. The war went pretty fast. Daddy came home. Came home to a surprise. I went home to a surprise. See, before he left, my mother became pregnant again. And while he was gone, another child came into the home. So here this father of ours comes home, and he's a complete stranger to us. I'm living with my grandparents. They sent me to live with the family unit, a stranger that I don't know, my father. My mother and my siblings, who I don't know either because I've been raised by my family, we have a strange connection there, all of us together. And things don't go well. I'm a small boy, and I even know things aren't going well. Time to go to school, of course. Being poor, living in the poor neighborhood, we didn't have a school in our neighborhood, so they had to send us to the other side of town where they had a school. That's where the white people lived. Parents get you excited. If a parent now, and I'm sure when you have a child that goes to school, you're going to get them excited so they won't be fearful to go to school, to go out of their environment, to experience something new, because we've never experienced anything in our life except where we lived. And they got me all excited to go to school. Being poor, we didn't have what the poor people had, or the rich people had. Clothes that I had were given to us, were hand-me-downs, were second-hand, were given to us. They were clean clothes, I remember that. We were clean people. We had food on the table. Not much, but we had it. I remember old coveralls that are in fashion today, the ones with the metal buttons on, you know, and they wear them now with one flap undone, but being cool, of course. We weren't cool back then. They had worn out knees. They had. My mother used to get those patches that were material patches that had glue on them. She had to put them on the material of the pants, and she had to iron them on. If the iron wasn't hot enough, it didn't adhere to the pants, and they kind of rolled up on the edges. I remember those things. Her shoes weren't new. I never had a new pair of shoes in my life till I was older in life. Most times they were all scuffed up. Sometimes they were so scuffed you couldn't tell what color they were. That shoelaces at all, they were all tied in knots. And sometimes my shoes were so raggedy that the sole would come loose from the body of the shoe, and when I walked, it made a flapping sound. That's how I went to school. And I was happy, and I was joyous, and I was free. And when I went to school, my very first day of school, my life changed, and I didn't know my life changed. I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 43, and when I had to take a fearless and searching and fearless moral inventory of my life and go back through my life, I went back to the first grade. At the age of 43, I remember what happened to me in the first grade that changed my life. This is what happened to me when I went to grade school, very first day of school. I knew I was different just by the way the children treated us. We didn't dress like them, we didn't eat like them, we didn't talk like them. Called us names like wetback and spick and beaner. I didn't know what those words meant, but I knew they were hurtful just by the way they said them. I was punched, I was hit, I was kicked, I was knocked down my very first day at school. And the most humiliating thing that ever happened to me at that time in my life is another child spit on me. And I remember that today as if it was yesterday, and it was hurtful. And something happened to me. And I didn't know what happened to me. And what happened to me is I withdrew inside of me. What I didn't do is I didn't go to my teacher and say, why are they treating us this way? I didn't go to my mother and my father and say, why is this happening to us? I didn't go to anybody with authority and say, what's going on here? I withdrew inside of me. And when I withdrew inside of me, I became a very revengeful child at that point in my life. And I was that way until I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it intensified as I grew up in life. I was different than you, and you weren't going to hurt me. And that's the way I lived my life. Mom and Dad weren't improving their lot in life. They had all these kids. Another one was on the way by then. Yeah. Couldn't procure a good job. Couldn't raise our standard of living. And when people are in that kind of environment and they can't get ahead and they feel a little desperate and hopeless in that kind of situation, what do they do? What do we do? What did I do? They started drinking. When you start drinking and you feel that hopelessness and despair in your life and you see no way out, what do you do?